Welcome to Faith and Freedom. We hope to inform, inspire, and encourage you to stand up for faith and freedom as we discuss victories and challenges in the courts, in public policy, and in the culture. Faith and Freedom is brought to you by Liberty Counsel, a litigation, education, and policy organization. Join us now as we address the latest cultural issues across America and around the world.
There's a lot of fear, a lot of misinformation about COVID-19, including the masking. What is your position? What's the information that you are operating under with regards to masks? Well, our very special guest is Dr. Lee Merritt, and she is a board-certified orthopedic surgeon. She's going to be joining us on Faith and Freedom. I'm Matt Staver, founder and chairman of Liberty Counsel. Welcome, Dr. Merritt, to our program.
Thank you very much.
Dr. Merritt, there's a lot of fear, anxiety, and there's these mandates that come with no warning from governors and mayors and even other so-called medical associations that say that you ought to wear a mask with regards to COVID-19. And by wearing a mask, you'll reduce the probability or the possibility that you're going to get COVID. Is that accurate? And can you give us your medical view of masking? As a physician, you obviously operate on spines, and for your entire practice, you've had to wear a mask during surgical procedures. What's the difference between that and what we're experiencing now with COVID-19?
Right. I mean, I've been a surgeon. I've been in the operating room for most of 40 years, and I can tell you, never until this has anybody suggested that masks made a difference to viral transmission. We don't wear them for that reason. When I hear somebody say, oh, it's stupid to deny masks because surgeons wear them all the time, we wear them because we don't want to accidentally drool into the wound. And we also wear them to prevent ourselves from being splashed on by body fluids. So that's a whole different thing. The other thing is, it's true that masks might mask against big particle diseases such as Ebola. It's a virus, but it's a 1 micron virus. The best mask we have, which is the N95 mask, won't stop coronavirus. That's the one that it'll stop Ebola, but it only screens down to 0.3 microns. And actually, I was giving a talk last night, and a guy comes up to me and he says, I'm an astrophysicist, and I wish you'd talked about masks, because I always get in this discussion about this. And he gets it. It's the physics people that get this. We've done, up until 2019, if you look at the literature, there's never been literature supporting this stuff. It's all, you know, they might have thought it at one time, but truly, it doesn't work. And here's a point. If masks worked against viruses, don't you think they would have capitalized this on and made money in it? The CDC itself looked at masks.
So in other words, before COVID-19, if masks actually worked, why were there no recommendations to wear masks during the typical influenza season?
Right. OSHA knows it doesn't work. OSHA doesn't recommend it. And they've done studies, for example, where they actually put people, I know the Maryland Environmental Institute did a study where they actually took somebody in an N95 mask. They put them in a hermetically sealed kind of environment thing, and they showed that even an N95 mask, when you breathe and when you cough, you exceed the tolerances of the mask, by the way. When you cough or sneeze, you're actually exceeding the flow that these masks are rated to. But what happens...
Which means what? That comes back into your system?
That they're even not screening out 0.3 microns
out.
Because you're actually breathing out, you're pushing it through. But here's the deal. You know, the reason people are being sold this bill of goods, and quite frankly, the real scientists, they know this is a bill of goods, because I found papers. When I started looking at this, I said, what are they saying? I got what's called cognitive dissonance, when the world doesn't seem to be making sense. That's what they want us to be. They want us to be afraid and confused. Mm-hmm. But my reaction...
Well, fear is a huge motivating factor.
Right.
If you're fearful, then this is the alternative for you to not have fear. Here's a mask, here's a vaccine.
Right. So I started researching this, and I started looking at what they're claiming is the scientific articles. Because you hear this all the time. I had a school teacher tell me, oh, I know, you can find articles that say it doesn't work, but I can find 10 that say it does. Science isn't about a vote. It's about the truth. It's about the quality of the evidence. And what you'll find is, if you look at these papers today, they fall into two categories. One is they either falsify the whole thing, or they make up things that should never pass peer review, or they actually they prove something that isn't true. So what people understand about masks, it's kind of the thing that convinces people is when you sneeze into a mask, you can tell it keeps those big globs of sneeze juice, you know, whatever you want to call them. When you sneeze, you can tell it contains that in your mask, right? But what they are not telling you is that's not the infective material. Mm-hmm. What is infective are the tiny, tiny airborne particles that are part of air fluidity. It's part of the air all around us all the time from us speaking. Now, even if masks worked, let's just think about this too. There's a common sense thing that every bartender in every restaurant can tell you more than these fancy scientists. What are we doing? You put people in masks, they go into a restaurant, and they have to wear their mask in for 6 feet into the restaurant.
Right. But then, and then you sit down, at the because table. The virus only goes to a certain
right,
level.
Right, that's right.
Isn't that right? Yeah.
Right. And then
that must
suddenly
be what
you're suddenly safe sitting, but if you stand up, you're dangerous, okay? Right. If to go to the bathroom, you're dangerous, then you have to sit down
and
again.
You can sit there for a couple of hours and chat and laugh and have a good time.
And as Russell Blaylock points out, what do? You take your mask off. These cloth masks are the worst. You take the mask off. This contaminated cloth mask, you put on the dining room, the table you're going to eat on. You put your phone on it. You haven't washed your hands because you'd have to put it back on.
And you use it over and over again.
That's right.
So when you go to the surgical room, you take a mask and you throw it away after each use.
Right, after each use. And the other thing is, very few times in my life have I had to actually wear an N95 mask, like doing spine surgery on somebody that might have TB. That was what we used to call them TB masks. That's what they were for. It was really they were designed to protect
you from
TB.
But even the N95 mask, the most effective mask, will not stop a COVID-19 virus from penetrating it.
Right. Now, and let me tell you how
And that's true. If you have COVID, you're going to breathe out that
You're going to breathe
virus
it out.
And if somebody else has COVID, it's going to go right through the mask.
Right. Now, so, and let me tell you the way it works for N95 masks in the operating room. Here's what we do. When you are actually fit with an N95 mask. They come in, if you're going to do this right, see, this is how,
so it's not a one size fits all.
Right. Even if masks work, this is how they work. They don't work the way that we're doing it out in the real world. Masks do not work in the real world like they do in the operating room. In the operating room, they're fit to us. They come in different sizes, like shoes. We're fit to us. We're taught by an infectious disease nurse, usually, how to put them on and how to make sure they're hermetically sealed around your mouth and nose. Then, when you get done with surgery, you've got gloves on. You know how to take these. You know how to get these things off. So you, if they're because they have accretion, meaning as you breathe in, you're sucking in the potential pathogen. And the disease germs onto the outside of the mask. And you have to learn how to take them off and get rid of them sterilely. None of that's being done in the real world.
So masks don't work for COVID.
Right, they don't work.
Even the most effective mask, N95. So why the push for masks?
Well, and that's, they don't work to stop transmission of the disease. Yes, they'll stop transmission of some particles. That's a very different point. So they don't and the CDC knows this. They looked at this with flu, which is even a bigger virus, by the way, and they showed that sterilizing disinfecting your environment, hand washing and wearing a mask made no difference to community spread of influenza. If it doesn't matter for that, it doesn't matter for this. Now, why are we doing this? Because it is a symbol. It is a cult symbol. And I was in a lecture one time or a meeting, and it was a really good, very smart guy that gave this talk, and he pointed out about the Manchu Q, and I think it's an object lesson here. I live near Omaha, Nebraska, and in Omaha was where the railroads built, had a big railroad thing that went out west. And when we went out west to the railroads, they hired Chinese workers to go work those railroads. The Han Dynasty, which was the Hans are the biggest ethnic group in China, they were conquered by the Manchu before the turn of the century. And in the 1800s, the Manchu men, or the Chinese men of the Han had to submit by wearing the Manchu Q. Okay, they had to wear a haircut that wasn't the Han haircut, it was the Manchu haircut. So when they were conquered, they had to wear this haircut at penalty of death. It was a symbol of submission. In fact, it was so important that when those guys came over to America to work the railroads, if they were caught without their Q, the Chinese agents would execute them. So symbols are very important when you're trying to exercise control over a population. What this mask is a symbol of, for thousands of years. What does a mask do in the occult? It's a symbol of I stop talking, I'm going to be quiet, I'm not going to criticize, and I'm going to submit. Mm-hmm. And even beyond that, I have to say, I reviewed a book for a lady, I hope she publishes this, and she's very devout Christian, and she wrote this book about the occult symbolism of the mask and how it's anti-Christian. And what she points out is this, you know, if you put on a mask like I'm a surgeon, that's not an evil thing to do because I'm using it for a medical purpose.
Right. But if you're doing it for this.
If you're doing it and it has no medical purpose, it becomes a talisman. Mm. And that is prohibited. You're not supposed to cover your face with something like that.
Well, we have so much to cover with Dr. Lee Merritt. We're going to do more on this, of course, this week on Faith and Freedom. So you're not going to want to miss these episodes with Dr. Merritt. Today's on masks, but we're going to do so many other aspects of this COVID-19. You're not going to want to miss it. For more information, visit lc.org, lc.org, and lcaction.org. There we have a resources page, and you can be connected with America's frontline doctors, lcaction.org.
You've been listening to Faith and Freedom, brought to you by Liberty Counsel. We hope that we have motivated you to stand up for your faith, family, and freedom. Get informed and get involved today. Visit Liberty Counsel's website at lc.org.
There's a lot of misinformation about COVID, and one of the things that you constantly encounter is masks, and we've all known the inconsistency of masks. You have to wear a mask to go into a restaurant, but as soon as you sit down, you don't have to wear a mask. It's amazing that the virus doesn't go to a certain height, apparently. Well, we're going to be talking more about that, but also other aspects of COVID-19 and the impact this is having on our society, including children. I'm Matt Staver, founder and chairman of Liberty Counsel, and our very special guest on Faith and Freedom is Dr. Lee Merritt. She is a board-certified orthopedic surgeon. You've been in the surgical room for many, many years, and you have a lot of research that you've done on this issue with regards to COVID-19 and masking. Just to wrap up or sum up the issue of masks, the most effective mask, you have said, is the N95 mask that sometimes surgeons on some occasions may wear, but you have to be fitted with that mask. But that mask, even the most effective mask, N95, does not stop the COVID virus from going from you to someone else, breathing out, or for somebody else coming through that mask, because the COVID virus is smaller than the most effective N95 mask. Is that an accurate summation?
That's an accurate summation. And you know, it may trap some particles. There's no question about that. But keep in mind, too, there's a big difference from wearing a mask in an operating room than in the real world. In the real world, you have to drink. You have to eat. You have to do things. My favorite one is I gave a talk in Las Vegas, and I saw people raising their mask up to smoke while they were using the one-armed bandits. I mean, you can't make this up, but it's the idea. The real story is we live in a fishbowl of viruses all around us.
Well, and everyone has experienced this.
Right.
I go to a restaurant. It's a great Mexican restaurant. You have to wear a mask to get in. But when you're seated, I'm usually seated at a booth very, very close to the entrance. And as soon as I get to that, I can take the mask off. And it's literally about 10 feet of a difference. So how does that make sense? It makes no logical sense. But the implications of this are fear factors. Some people get very upset if they see you without a mask. And I was watching children the other day eating with their parents. And the grandmother apparently was the grandmother. And the parents and the grandmother did not have a mask on, but the two children did have masks. They're fairly young. And the only place they're probably getting that is from school or from other so-called propaganda sources. And they're probably fearful and wondering why mom and dad, grandma's not wearing the mask. What is this doing to our children?
Yeah, that's one of my biggest complaints in this whole show is the masking damage to our children. And I actually have a friend who's a pediatric psychiatrist, and I asked him, we were having dinner one night, and I said, if we stopped wearing the masks right now, would our children be okay? And he said, no, they're already damaged. He said, that, you know, it's not everybody. If you're
this
older,
is from a psychiatrist?
This is from a pediatric psychiatrist.
Pediatric, specializing in children.
And he said he's never seen suicidal ideation more than 10% in the past. You know, it's always been in the one digits. Now it's 25% in his practice of children. And he said the problem is, you know, if you're older and you're, you know, your ego's kind of been formed and you live in a good household and you don't have a lot of issues going on, you're probably going to be pretty okay. But these lesser children are not, because they're small and they're learning inchoate fear of the world around them, which is wrong. Here's the other thing. Children need to look at your face to learn psychosocial organization. That's what makes humans humans, is each other's looking at each other's face. In fact, they've done studies where they look at the metabolic use of the brain, and the biggest metabolic cost to the brain is when you look at another human's face, because it is so important to process that data. One of the things,
you don't know whether they're angry, mad, sad.
Right. So you're constantly looking at faces to understand the world around you, of humanity. It's an anti-human agenda to separate us like that. I know just in my medical clinic, the doctor-patient relationship is clearly inhibited by having everybody in a mask. But here's why I'm so sad about the children. I mean, I can't remember his name. I wish I'd gotten this, but he's a psychologist, and he's from Germany, and you can look this up. And he looks at what it's doing to our children. He talks about the still face experiment. This was actually, you can look that up. It's a still face experiment that was done in America. And it's a doctor that looked at like one-year-olds, and he had the mother interact with the child, and you know, you see a normal, happy child smiling and playing little games, you know, pointing at things and having the mother react. And then the mother turns around momentarily and comes back to the child with an expressionless face, just stops smiling, stops doing anything. And the child at first tries to engage the mother. You know, he'll look at him kind of quizzically, like, what's going on? And then the baby starts kind of trying to smile and get the mother to smile, can't do it. And then he starts pointing over her shoulder like he wants her to look, and she won't do it. And then he breaks into just crying his little heart out because he can't take it because that's not right. And I see this
happening.
And
that's what masks are doing.
That's what masks are doing. And I'll tell you, in my own life, this is one of the saddest things I've ever seen. Now, my boys are grown up, they're gone, they're great young men. So they're in their 30s or late 20s. So, and I'm glad they're not going through this, but I remember when, you know, my mother was horrified that one day a week I put them in preschool. But anyway, one day a week they would go to preschool and I would see this. And they were happy and they'd be chatting with their buddies and they'd be in little line marching around back to class or something. I looked out my window in my office the other day in the city, and there's a preschool down the strip mall from me. And normally I used to see these little kids doing the same thing, but now they're in masks, their heads are bowed, they've got their hands behind their back. They're walking in a little single file, 2 to 3 feet apart, like little miniature gulag prisoners, which essentially they are. It's the saddest thing I've ever seen in my life. We can't keep doing this. Even if you told me that masks decrease transmission by 10%, I will tell you that is not worth the world that you're going to be giving us.
Yeah.
And my question to people is, you know, I tried to do this with the city council. I said, how many decades are you going to do this? Because we have a viral season every year.
Yeah.
This is not the answer.
In fact, we've done a lot of research on various kinds of situations of suicide, anxiety, depression, domestic abuse, and so forth, since churches have been locked down, since people have been at stay-at-home orders, their jobs are threatened, the whole masking issue. And the sad aspect of what we see is within the young people, going back to first grade and even before that, the depression has skyrocketed, like you said, and the suicide has skyrocketed. In fact, a Las Vegas school district recently woke up apparently and said, we've got to bring children back to school because they're committing suicide and they're at a high depressive level. But it's not going to help necessarily if you then mask them and you push them apart from each other and they don't have that social interaction that they desperately need. God made us to be socially interactive individual beings made in His image.
And, you know, in Sweden, just as a point, 1.9 million school children, you know, kindergarten through senior and high school, 1.9 million school children last year did not miss a day of school. They did not mask. They did not social distance, and not one death. Their teachers did not get sick at any greater rate than the background noise. So they're going to be the one country of normal children out of this. Why can we not look at that? Don't tell me that's an anecdote. Let's look at that and say, why are we doing this to our children? So it says to me, this is a purposeful takedown of our society and our nation.
There's a bigger agenda going on.
There's a bigger agenda.
And it's one
of
control. And part of that agenda, and we're going to talk about it in another Faith and Freedom, is having a vaccine and then determining whether or not you actually had the vaccine is going to require that people have a digital passport, green passport, whatever it's being called in different parts of the world, tracing you and tracking you and having that as your passport to enter into living outside of your home. And that's the problem that we see as a bigger agenda, and masking is one of literally keeping people in submission. This is our guest, Dr. Lee Merritt. We could go on and on and on, but we're going to do more episodes with you, Dr. Merritt. Thank you so much for joining us. We've been talking about masks, and if you didn't hear our previous episode in this, you want to hear that, but you also want to listen for the rest of this week, where we're going to be talking about the COVID-19 vaccine. Have you received the vaccine? Are you thinking about receiving the vaccine? What's the real information on the vaccine? We're going to be talking about the medical facts as opposed to some of the things that you might read or don't even read in the media, some of the distortion. We're also going to be talking about some of the consequences. And the good news is we'll talk about some of the existing things that you can do to protect yourself now from COVID-19. For more information, you can go to lc.org and lcaction.org/resources. We have information and links there on this and other topics, including a direct link to America's Frontline Doctors, lcaction.org/resources.
You've been listening to Faith and Freedom, brought to you by Liberty Counsel. We hope that we have motivated you to stand up for your faith, family, and freedom. Get informed and get involved today. Visit Liberty Counsel's website at lc.org.
It's incredible how the world has changed since the early part of 2020, and there's a lot of fear out there, and fear is an incredibly powerful motivator. And oftentimes people are willing to do things to get their freedom back because they're fearful of not following what they're hearing. We're going to be talking about the fear and what's behind it, as well as COVID-19 on Faith and Freedom. I'm Matt Staver, founder and chairman of Liberty Counsel, and our special guest today is Dr. Lee Merritt, a board-certified orthopedic surgeon who's done a lot of research on this, and you're also a member of America's Frontline Doctors. And by the way, that's a great source of information, americasfrontlinedoctors.com. Welcome to Faith and Freedom, Dr. Merritt.
Thank you very much.
Dr. Merritt, one of the things that I've seen, particularly in litigating regarding churches since March of 2020, is this fear and the misinformation. For example, fear that churches ought to be closed, misinformation that if churches are open, they're going to be super spreader events, and we've not had that in the litigation that we have been involved in. And therefore, there's this fear factor to say, you need to close, you need to shut down restaurants, you need to shut down businesses, you can't go to work, certain businesses are allegedly essential, others are not. And so in order to overcome that fear and the restrictions on your freedom, many people are willing to do anything, including take experimental vaccines. Talk to us about the fear. Is it valid in terms of the reality of the science with regards to COVID-19, or is it being used for other purposes?
Well, let's put this in perspective. The real pandemic of 1918 killed about 50 million people, 2 million in the United States alone. This is not even close. This isn't a pandemic. Now, I'm not one to say this is just the flu. I admit this is a bad viral season. This is a little different than the flu, and it can kill some people we wouldn't expect it to kill. But we've got this now. We've got, we know how to prophylax people. We know how to help prevent this. We kind of know who's at risk, and we know how to do early treatment. I know that many of you your listeners may not know that because it's been censored. But this,
have a whole program we want to talk the alternatives and the early treatment.
So I don't want to diminish the fact. I know people have lost loved ones to this. I'm not saying it's not real, but this is basically a psychological operation against our country. I don't know how to look at it any other way. The masking doesn't make any sense. It doesn't make any sense to think that you can't sing in church, but you can, have a riot in the street that doesn't super spread. You can have certain things that don't. It's just incredibly. It either is crazy or it's a planned psychological operation. And I'm just going to tell you, in favor of the planned psychological operation. If you want to control a population, what you do is it's problem reaction solution. You make them afraid, and then you confuse them and that makes them anxious. And people will do anything to get out of that anxiety.
So the problem
zone.
Is COVID.
The problem is they convince you
And then
you
the reaction
COVID's
is
bad.
We need to do something against COVID.
Right.
And then the solution. Here's what we have as a solution right. to address that problem.
Right. And they're actually, you know, I'm not a virologist. I shouldn't even be in this fight. But the problem is, just morally, I couldn't sit by and watch this thing go by. I mean, I'm 10 years in the Navy. I never went to a shooting war. This is kind of my war. And I feel like we have to take this on. We have to understand what's happening to us. And there's a very interesting program that was developed. Well, it was not a program, it was a book. It's Albert Biederman. And Biederman was asked, he's a psychologist, and he was asked to look at the prisoners of war coming back from Korea, because some of them had become so anti-American, turned against their country. And the government said, you know, the military said, could you look at these people? What did the Chinese do? Did they give them some weird soup that made them like this? And they said, no. He said, no, just psychologic control mechanisms. And here's how you do it. And this is classic prisoner control. He said, first you isolate, and you'll think about what has happened to us in this big COVID nightmare. First you isolate people, right? Lockdowns.
Mm-hmm. Lockdowns.
Then you monopolize perception. So you don't let them hear anything except
nothing,
what you
no
want them to hear.
Nothing, no alternative information.
So you MSM, mainstream media, bombard you with the same fear-mongering that, oh, everybody's... They changed the language. They call cases... We never called cases anything except sick people. Now a case is a positive test, which now we're finding out probably meant nothing. But the positive test... It drove the numbers up to make you more afraid. That's the monopolization of perception. They told you things. Then you add there are things like ridiculous requirements. So you know, probably in prisoner of war people, you know, you'd make them stand in the corner or something. But we are made to wear masks that don't work. You go to your desk and you're surrounded by this stupid little piece of plastic. One of the stupidest things I saw was in Las Vegas where, you know, number one, people are allowed to smoke under, you know, they take their mask off to smoke and that doesn't seem to bother anybody. And then when you're in the poker tables, people have these little plastic enclosures around them. Of course, the top of the enclosure is all open. or these masks that you see that are plastic it's just like
a splash guard.
When
I was flying an airline, and this was multiple different airlines, you literally can touch the person right beside of you.
Right.
You're just a few inches from them. But when you get ready to exit, they tell you, now wait for the row in front of you to leave
and then maintain
your 6-foot distancing. Well, I just flew for 2 hours and I was inches away from this person. Now it's going to take me 30 seconds, a minute to exit, but I've got to stay 6 feet away.
I had the exact same thing happen. I was in the back row of the plane and we all just started laughing. Now, for the purpose of safety, you must maintain social distancing when we deplane.
But the crazy thing is that... I think they know it's crazy as well, but they say it with a straight face because you become almost programmed to go through this routine.
And programming is what this is. I recommend people read Biederman's Chart of Coercion. You can find it online and just see, because that explains everything that's happening to us. And, you know, when we realize it's a program, we can resist it. I actually asked, so I have a friend who's a psychiatrist.
There's a Christian school. Many of the kids that go there never saw snow. The first snow of the year of 2021, they went outside because they're all social distancing and everything, and they're sort of in their rooms. They went outside and had a snowball fight, and they did not have masks. And 100 people called the local public health department to turn in that university for putting the entire community at risk.
And that's what's going to happen if we don't get ourselves out of this. You become the capos. And the other thing is, I asked my psychiatrist friend, I said, explain to me these people wearing a mask alone in a car. I mean, even if you believe in masks, that makes no scientific sense.
Riding their bike on a sidewalk by themselves.
Right. The goal, you know, the joke is somewhere somebody's in a shower in a mask. You know, what does this all mean?
I'm sure that's true.
Here's what he said, and this is important to understand the longer this goes on. This is why we have to take our world back. What he said was, those people are the Stockholm Syndrome people. So when you add confusion, so Tony Fauci talking about, oh, you know, you don't have to wear a mask, it's only for medical personnel. And then he said, oh, no, wait, everybody's got to wear a mask. You got to wear it all the time. Oh, wait, masks are only to keep your hands off your face. I mean, I don't know about you, but I think it's probably wrong to mandate me do something to keep my hand away from my face. Don't I even have the right to put my hand on the face now? And then he said, now we need multiple masks.
Oh, no,
we don't need 7 masks. It doesn't actually work. Go back to the one mask or, you know. So my point is, people say, oh, he's just, you know, crazy or losing or something. No, that's a planned takedown. So you add confusion to the fear and you get anxiety and people will do anything. And this is what my psychiatrist explained to me about this. what when you're anxious, people will do anything to get out of that anxiety zone. So for me, I experienced this anxiety because I saw all the lies going on. I said, what's going on? Well, my solution was, I'm going to read everything I can about this and figure out what's going on and take this on, okay? But people that don't approach it that way or don't have the scientific background to be able to wade through all the literature stuff, they become, some of them have, they're so afraid that what they do is, they think this is what Stockholm Syndrome is. They figure if they do exactly what the government says or their captors, they will actually be okay. They'll be safe. So I wash my hands 40 times a day. I wear 6 layers of masks. I stand in these little government-approved circles, which I think is another saddest thing I've ever seen. Mm-hmm. Healthy, normal men standing in a white circle on the ground, 6 feet apart, and they somehow think if they step outside the circle, they're now hazardous to health. Yeah. You know, this is ridiculous, but it's part of a program. And so they have convinced us to do all these things. And it doesn't make scientific sense, but those are the people that are driving around in the car by themselves in a mask are people that really think it's going to make them safer.
Well, there's a lot more that we can talk about, and we're going to do that on another episode of Faith and Freedom. Our guest is Dr. Lee Merritt. We have a couple of websites for you to go to. LC.org, that's our main website, and lcaction.org. And when you're there, lcaction.org/resources. On that page, we have lots of information about hydroxychloroquine, COVID-19, other issues, including a link to americasfrontlinedoctors.com. And Dr. Merritt is a member of America's Frontline Doctors. What you need is information to dispel the fear. And we're going to be talking on a future program that there is nothing for which you ought to be fearful. For more information, go to lc.org. That's lc.org.
You've been listening to Faith and Freedom, brought to you by Liberty Counsel. We hope that we have motivated you to stand up for your faith, family, and freedom. Get informed and get involved today. Visit Liberty Counsel's website at lc.org.
There's a number of alternative or preventative medications and things that you can do with regards to COVID-19. The bottom line is, we don't want you to live in fear. There is nothing for which you ought to be afraid. And we ought to be very careful at this time of fear that is being pushed around the world, frankly, that we don't sacrifice our freedom and our health based on misinformation. I'm Matt Staver, founder and chairman of Liberty Counsel. Joining me here in the studio on Faith and Freedom is Dr. Lee Merritt. She is a board-certified orthopedic surgeon and has done a significant amount of research in this area. She also is a member of America's Frontline Doctors. Welcome, Dr. Merritt.
Thank you very much.
Let's talk about some of the other alternatives before we ever get to a vaccine, and we'll have a whole episode on that. But before we even had COVID-19 in our vocabulary, we already had medications that were on the market that had been very effective on a wide variety of usage, including in the influenza area and other viral infections. And two of those that come to mind are hydroxychloroquine, and another one is ivermectin. Tell us about the effectiveness of those medications to prophylactically treat COVID-19, and other kinds of supplements or vitamins that people ought to be taking to have an increased and better immune system.
Well, thank you. The ivermectin and the hydroxychloroquine, specifically the hydroxychloroquine, the saddest thing is we've known about it. Somebody has known about it. They didn't tell the doctors or anybody. But there was research going back to 1970s that we had a potential treatment for viral illnesses. And until now, we never used it because we were never told it existed. And that is a crime against humanity.
But so that would be a treatment for, say, for the example, the seasonal flu.
Right. It appears it helps that too. I mean, this isn't just this virus.
Hydroxychloroquine, or HCQ, as it's sometimes referred to short, it goes back to 65-plus years of FDA approval.
It's a generic drug, safe drug.
So it's not very expensive. The problem with using HCQ or promoting that from a big pharmacological situation is that they don't get the new money off of whatever new vaccine that they want to come out with, whether it's for SARS or the swine flu, H1N1. when there's already an existing treatment, is that a possibility as to why you don't see much information about HCQ?
Right. If you want to read, I wrote an article. It's on the fall journal at the Association of American Physicians and Surgeons that goes through the whodunit of why we've covered up viral treatment for 40 years. But there are three possible motives that I've come up with. The first one is orange man bad. Trump mentioned it. We hate him. We're going to not go along with that. Second one is a $69 billion vaccine industry gets significantly diminished, maybe to zero, if you have a treatment for viral illnesses. Because we don't know what these treat because they haven't looked at it. But, you know, we know it treats certain types of airborne viral illnesses in this category. And so not just hydroxychloroquine, but ivermectin and maybe both together work even better. So there's that. And then the third thing is, you know, you can't control, well, back up. We, you know, how we entered the nuclear age, then we got kind of, you know, and everybody was afraid because now we're in the age of nuclear weapons and we took certain deterrents. Well, now we've just entered the viral terrorism age, if you will, that we can have these designer viruses that could change every season. But the issue is they kind of use a similar missile technology, and that's the coronavirus. You have to have a transmissible airborne virus to make this scary. And these seem to all probably be taken down by hydroxychloroquine and or ivermectin. So you can't terrorize a population if they have a treatment in their back pocket.
So in other words, if you have COVID-19 come into existence in our history, and now you've got a generic drug that can actually be effective to treat it, and you also have another drug that's a newer drug, but it's been on the market for some time, ivermectin. And sometimes people, particularly working with animals, might think of that as a parasitic drug to treat various kinds of internal parasites. But those two drugs that are on the market, very effective against treating COVID-19. If they promoted that, there would be no fear.
Right.
And there would be no reason to move forward with a vaccine because we already have something in an existing medication. One of them is very, very cheap, which is the hydroxychloroquine.
And they got a Nobel Prize for ivermectin. This isn't an unimproved experimental drug. I mean, this is a really good drug. So, you know, one of my complaints in this whole thing is the crimes against our elderly. Mm. And I'm going to tell you how we could prevent this. 40% by the CDC's numbers of death in this country are the elderly in nursing homes. Yeah. And so here's what we know and what we could do. What happens to them? We've isolated them. We've put them in solitary confinement, which is cruel. Number two, they tend not to eat a great diet. We don't supplement them, and we don't prophylax them. Now, I'm going to tell you, this is good for everybody, but this is what we could have been doing. Instead of isolating them from their family and friends, every flu season, okay, and personally, you should be on these things. Everybody should be on these things. The one thing we know is the biggest risk of going down hard and dying or going to the ICU is low vitamin D level, and you can't get it from the sun. So I take 10,000 units a day. You want to get your levels above 30. I'd like to get my level above 60 because that's an anti-cancer level.
And you can
level.
Get tested for your
right,
vitamin
test
levels.
Your level. And nobody has overdosed at 10,000 units a day if you're not on renal dialysis. So I say start it right now because you want to get
and
your levels
D
up.
And vitamin D is good for anything.
D3, yeah.
COVID, influenza, helps your immune system.
Right. If we were living on the equator, we'd be getting 30,000 to 40,000 units a day from the sun. Mm. But we are not on the equator. And as you go farther north, no matter what you do, I know somebody that played 16 or 18 holes of golf 6 days a week all year round in Yuma, Arizona, the sunniest city in America, whose D level was 20. Okay, mm. You cannot
so you
get
still,
it from the
you
sun,
need it from a supplement.
Even if you're a farmer.
So
everybody should take
ought to
D.
Have vitamin D.
And we knew this years ago for flu. Okay, so that's a big one.
You always hear about vitamin C, but you never used to hear about vitamin D.
D is a big one. And I've been doing this for a long time because I'm an orthopedic surgeon. I see adult rickets all the time. This is something that everybody should take. Number two, you should take zinc because everybody's deficient in zinc if you're not supplementing because our soils are deficient. I tested my children years ago, and they were deficient. And the kids absorb everything, so there was a problem, and we eat a good diet. So at least 15 milligrams a day, if not 30. And then the next one, you talked about vitamin C. And let me just say, pharma and the government, they always want to tell you, oh, that just makes expensive urine. Vitamins, that's not true. Vitamin C is actually like the ammunition for your white cell army. If you get sick, you've got white cells that are going to go out and take out this virus or bacterium, right? But just like a Lance Corporal in the Marine Corps, you can't load him down with 800 pounds of ammunition in the morning and expect him to march with it and go wherever he's going to go indeed. So you have to feed him ammunition all day long. And that's the truth with vitamin C. If I give you 5 grams of vitamin C in the morning, you're going to pee most of it out. What you need to do is take a little bit all day long if you can. That's, during the winter season, and I used to do this, but you get lazy, I admit. But during this season, for this whole thing, I've been doing it. What I do is I get some chewable vitamin C that I like.
And you do that throughout the day?
I just throw it out the day. I have 500 milligrams every hour or two, and by the time the day's gone by, I miss some here and there. I probably get 3 to 4 grams throughout the day.
So
and
vitamin D, zinc,
vitamin
and C throughout the day.
Right.
And then, obviously, if you have COVID, and even for preventative, hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin.
Well, there's some more things you should take. One of the big ones that we don't hear too much about is N-acetylcysteine, or NAC. And that helps the overshoot of the inflammation problem. And it turns out it's good for your brain, it's good to prevent dementia, it's good for anti-cancer. NAC is really a good thing. I know people, you can tend to get tired of taking pills, so you don't take as many, but that's one I used to take. And on my website, we have a thing about the 9 supplements everybody should take, and that's one of them. The other one is selenium. And I have a formulation that's iodine plus selenium, which is a double good thing, because iodine is good for anti-infective stuff, and selenium. And then the last one, which I didn't know about before this one, is quercetin. And if you look at Dr. McCullough and
I started taking that recently.
Right. Dr. McCullough's protocol and other people's protocol, quercetin is a really good drug. It's not a drug. I mean, it's a good herbal supplement that's 500 milligrams a day or twice a day for this. Now, the hydroxychloroquine, I have a friend who screened 20,000 people. He treated 2,000. He's in urgent care. No deaths because he used hydroxychloroquine or ivermectin early. And so we could prophylax these people in the nursing home with 2 pills a week.
What is your website, Dr. Merritt?
Oh, it's no period after the doctor, drleemerritt.com.
Okay, drleemerritt.com. And Dr. Merritt has been our guest. You can also, we'll put your website connection up at Liberty Counsel's website, lc.org, and also at Liberty Counsel Action's website, lcaction.org/resources. And we'll put all that information there, including your direct link. Now, if you have a problem with your doctor, doesn't want to give you hydroxychloroquine, ivermectin, get another doctor, or go to americasfrontlinedoctors.com, americasfrontlinedoctors.com. This is life and death. Bottom line is, don't live your life in fear. There's no reason to. Learn more about this and other information, and stand up and protect our faith and freedom. lc.org.
You've been listening to Faith and Freedom, brought to you by Liberty Counsel. We hope that we have motivated you to stand up for your faith, family, and freedom. Get informed and get involved today. Visit Liberty Counsel's website at lc.org.
On today's Faith and Freedom, we're going to be talking about the so-called COVID vaccine. Is it really a vaccine? And what should your considerations be with regards to that injection? I'm Matt Staver, founder and chairman of Liberty Counsel. Joining me is Dr. Lee Merritt, a board-certified orthopedic surgeon who's done a lot of research in this area of COVID-19 masking and alternative treatments to COVID-19 that already are in existence. And you also are a member of America's Frontline Doctors, a very great resource for people. Welcome, Dr. Merritt.
Thank you.
Let's talk about the Pfizer and the Moderna vaccine. And for now, you can't see this, but I'm putting it in quotes, if you will. Is it a vaccine? Is it different than other vaccines? And let's go into more detail about what it is and what it may do or not do.
I don't think it meets the definition of a vaccine because it doesn't prevent transmission of disease. Even Pfizer admits that. And I will tell you that, the problem we have here is that for the average person, if you wanted to look up a prescription for a blood pressure medication, you could look it up, and in plain English, you could at least come to some understanding how that drug worked and whether or not, and the risk benefits. But I'm going to tell you that that's impossible to do for this, even for trained professionals. I mean, I've been a physician for 40 years. I tried to work my way through the Pfizer application to the FDA. I had to call 3 people. I mean, it's very, very complicated. And there is a good review in the British Medical Journal by a Dr. Doshi, that I think that was his last name, Doshi. And he goes through this in detail, and he shows how that's not what they're saying. The first thing to say about this is it's nothing like we know a vaccine to be.
Because a typical vaccine takes the virus itself in a weakened condition and then injects it into your body. Your body then recognizes it, remembers it. It's not enough of the virus to actually overcome your body and make you sick in most situations. So when you then later get that particular virus in its full strength, you get an infection. Your body's already set, ready to go to attack it with its own immune system. Is that the normal process of a vaccine?
But
and
this is
normal vaccines also take at least roughly an average of 10 years from research to deployment, 5 years of which require testing of various different kinds of applications. It's a long process, is it not?
Right. So this is, you know, there's a lot of concerns I have about this. So this is not that kind of a vaccine. You're given a man-made...
So it doesn't have the
COVID-19 pathogen. It doesn't have a pathogen, no.
Pathogen.
What it actually does is take a piece of programmed mRNA, which is just a little piece of genetic material, that will produce the pathogen or some part of it or some relationship in your cells. And that's... So they're actually... It would be like if I were going to give you a measles vaccine with this technology, what I would be doing is giving you a little piece of RNA that made you have measles in your cells and hope that your immune response would quickly take it out and not so that
Does
the measles
didn't
overwhelm
you. Does this embed it in all your
you.
Cells?
I don't know if it's all your cells, but it's certainly in the muscle cells and the things that you're getting the vaccine in. So
this is an mRNA is part of your DNA. It's like a messenger. Is that how it works?
Yeah, it's not. When people are worried that it's going to change their DNA, I think the jury's out on that. But what is clearly true is it is genetic material you're getting injected. Now,
so it's completely different than a vaccine.
Right,
that
it's not
we're
a vaccine.
So there's never been an mRNA approved in the history of America for a vaccine.
They've never made it into a drug, although they tried. It didn't pass the safety trials. We've never had this used on humans before. We only have 2 months of follow-up. The animal trials failed in the past. We've had multiple recommendations from multiple researchers never to ever, ever bypass animal testing, but we bypassed long-term animal testing.
Because usually what you do is you go through the testing of animals, you get that information, then you go out to test humans, and then eventually you release it to the general public once it's approved.
And other things that are of concern is that mRNA or RNA is a reactive species in your cells, meaning it can cause inflammation. And now we're creating this product that allows it to linger in our cells. And we're already seeing autoimmunity increase in some people. And so, some of the deaths may be attributed to that. We're pretty sure this increases your risk of anaphylaxis. These are the known complications.
And we don't know what's going to happen if somebody actually gets the COVID infection after getting this vaccine.
And that is one of the big risks. And it's called immune enhancement. And it has to do with the fact that, or pathogenic priming. We know about this process. And it's specifically worrisome in this type of virus like Zika, Corona, respiratory syncytial virus. These groups of viruses have a bad acting potential, and it can happen naturally, but it's certainly we know it can happen after a vaccine where we give you the vaccine, you do okay, but then when you secondarily get the virus, you get overwhelming inflammatory reaction, and it makes the disease worse.
So it can make it actually worse.
Yeah, and in fact, there's a group, and I can't remember, that are demanding that the minimum we should do is have informed consent for specifically that event, because this can happen a long term after you get the vaccine. So
you won't necessarily have right now we've seen deaths that have occurred right after or other kinds of physical conditions, but we don't know what's going to happen 2 months, 3 months down the road, 5 months, a year, or when you actually get COVID.
Right. This was put through on an emergency fast track basis. There's not independent oversight, no time really for public comment. It's rush. And I tell you, I've never seen a vaccine rolled out to distribution before the FDA adjudicated on it.
Yeah, and so
never.
What we have here, so this is really not a full-blown FDA approval.
This is
an emergency experimental situation that we're dealing with.
And we usually shouldn't even use the term vaccine. I keep tripping over that word, but it's an experimental biologic agent, or experimental gene therapy would be closer to the truth.
To compound the problem with this, you have two companies that have gone through this FDA emergency process, Pfizer and Moderna. And Moderna, for those people that don't know, is only a 10, 11-year-old company, founded in 2010. And it has never, ever had an approved medication or drug that has been approved by the FDA.
Yeah.
Never, ever had it. They're secretive about their technology. And then in March of 2020, an amazing meeting between the president of Moderna at a pharmaceutical meeting in the White House. Afterward, the president went to the president of the United States and the other representatives and said, we, Moderna, can make a vaccine in a couple of months. And they've never been successful in anything else on that level. Well, then the next day, the FDA approved them, and they got $453 million. And lo and behold, now we have Moderna. And I believe the people that are taking this are the ones who are, frankly, part of this clinical trial.
Right. This whole thing is crazy. And I think one of the biggest concerns I have that just came out recently, and again, I'm not a virologist. I'm not the person that really understands this as well as some people, but Dr. Wolfgang Wodarg in Europe, he and Mike Yaden, who these are real scientists. He's an epidemiologist physician. Dr. Yaden is a scientist that used to be a senior vice president for Pfizer. He was the senior science officer for Pfizer. And he basically, they're concerned, it turns out that the antibodies that this is going to produce may react with a woman's placenta. It has to do with this coronavirus. It's kind of a weird biology that women's placenta have the viral stuff in it.
So, and we've already seen miscarriages.
Right, and we've seen miscarriages.
So a doctor, a female doctor recently, she sent out a tweet. She was excited about getting this. And within about a week later, within a few days, frankly, she miscarried at 14 and a half weeks.
Right, and so it's, second trimester miscarriages are kind of rare. I have that from my friends that do that kind of business. I don't do that. But you know, and we're doing it. The other thing you have to ask yourself is it worth it? We're not really in a pandemic. This isn't a pandemic. I mean, I know they call it plandemic. My term is, I like to say, this was a flu d'etat. This is a made-up thing. And yes, we have problems, but we have other solutions. If you have a treatment, you don't need a vaccine. So I really recommend, I don't tell people what to do in terms of the vaccine. They have to make their own informed choice. I just think we should have information. But the real issue is, if we want to get out of this pandemic or this flu d'etat, this non-pandemic, what we need to do, we need to turn off the TV, we need to reopen our businesses, and we need to get rid of these masks that are dividing us as a society. That's the real antidote to this problem, not a...
And throw off the fear.
Right,
we talked
right.
before on Faith and Freedom with Dr. Lee Merritt that there's other alternative treatments. There's various vitamin supplements, D and zinc and C. And there's also hydroxychloroquine medication, which is generic now, and ivermectin, which actually won an award. And so there are other options for you out there. Don't live in fear and learn the facts. We have more information at lc.org, and we'll also put up Dr. Lee Merritt's website, drleemerritt.com. And we'll also have that at lcaction.org, lcaction.org, and go to the resources page, lcaction.org/resources.
You've been listening to Faith and Freedom, brought to you by Liberty Counsel. We hope that we have motivated you to stand up for your faith, family, and freedom. Get informed and get involved today. Visit Liberty Counsel's website at lc.org, where you can obtain email alerts and other information to keep you informed and involved. The website again, lc.org.